Hello, and welcome to Ox Talk on Tuesday, the 14th of May, 2024. My name's Simon, and I'll be compiling this week's edition, in which you will hear a selection of news items from the local Oxford papers, chosen by Mandy Wood and Leslie Court, and read by Hazel Hobbs and Leslie Court. We shall also hear Robert Frost's poem, The Road Not Taken, introduced and read by Jenny. Copying and distribution of the USBs is by Michelle Lawful. Before we start, here is some information on how to listen to Ox Talk on your Alexa device. At the end of the news, you can hear information on how to access Ox Talk online.
Notice to listeners of OxTalk who use a smart speaker to access our service. There are new instructions for anyone who listens to OxTalk using Alexa. To listen to OxTalk in this way, you now have to use the Talking Newspaper skill. First, you need to enable it. Simply say, Alexa, enable Talking Newspaper. Then, to listen to OxTalk, please follow this procedure. Alexa, open Talking Newspaper.
Welcome to your Talking Newspaper skill. Please say the name of a newspaper or a town or city you would like to hear from.
Oxford.
Here are the following newspapers nearest to Oxford. Please pick a newspaper name. Oxford and District Talking News, Whitney Talking News Latest Edition, Whitney Talking News Previous Edition, Whitney Talking Magazine, Wallingford, and District Talking Newspaper. Or do you want to hear more?
Oxford and District Talking News.
Do you want to listen to Oxford and District Talking News?
Yes.
This is Oxford and District Talking News.
If you have problems listening to Ox Talk in this way, it could be due to the way that your Alexa device is set up. Please check the settings with whoever set up your device in the first place. If you still have problems, please contact OxTalk and we will try to help.
We have more work to do, admitted the leader of Oxford City Council, whose Labour group lost 7 seats in last week's disappointing election, leaving it well short of a majority. Councillor Susan Brown spoke out after suggestions of a shake-up in the political map of Oxford after recent elections. Results saw the Independent Oxford Alliance Party, IOA, an anti-LTN party which formed in November, gaining 4 seats in Rose Hill and Iffley, Littlemore, Cowley and Live Alley wards. Labour lost the Littlemore ward after IOA candidate Anna Staris beat the Labour incumbent Sandy Douglas. There were also losses in other wards to IOA candidates following the resignation of councillors from the party over Sir Keir Starmer's rhetoric around Gaza, as well as the unsuccessful candidacy of a new Labour candidate for Live Alley. Excuse me. Labour ended the day with 11 seats, which means they now have 20 overall. Ms Brown, who represents the Churchill ward, said that though the results locally were disappointing, the party was still confident about delivering its manifesto. She said nationally the results were extremely good for Labour and have put us in a great position to win the general election. Locally has been more disappointing for us. We want to think carefully about the results and what they tell us. We want to work hard to instill more trust with residents. She said there were 2 main areas which may have lost the party votes: Israel's war on Gaza and low traffic neighbourhood schemes. Neither are things over which we have a lot of influence, she said. People have strong feelings about both of those issues and we stand with them, but in terms of what we do with this, it is fairly minimal. Despite the losses in seats, Councillor Brown stated the party will continue in administering their manifesto, which focuses on delivering affordable housing, helping residents with cost of living crisis, promoting Oxford's living wage, tackling climate change, and improving leisure facilities. I certainly didn't hear anything on the doorstep other than support for our manifesto, she said. It's very much based on what people have told us they want and need from their city council. Clearly we have more work to do, and we will continue to do what we do all the time, which is listen to our local residents. It's a case of making sure we are delivering on the priorities of Oxford. That's what Labour has always done.
Archaeologists have discovered what is thought to be a Bronze Age well during relief roadwork in Benson. The well-preserved wooden well was unearthed during archaeological excavations at the site of Oxfordshire County Council's project to construct the southwesterly section of the Benson Relief Road. The excavation was undertaken by Oxford Archaeology on behalf of the council to ensure any archaeological finds are recorded in line with planning permission. John Boothroyd, Senior Project Manager at Oxford Archaeology, detailed the discovery. When investigating what appeared to be a standard pit for the site, the archaeological team started exposing the remains of a preserved wooden post driven vertically into the ground. Further excavation revealed that these posts formed the uprights of a wattle structure that lined the edge of the pit. Wattle is a fence-like structure made of wooden stakes interwoven with small branches and twigs. Preservation of wooden structures from this period is rare, and the remains have survived all this time due to being buried in waterlogged ground. Despite the extremely challenging conditions, the team were able to expose and fully record the well in the ground. The specialist soil samples that were collected will also help establish what the surrounding landscape would have been like and the intensity to which it was settled when the well was actively being used. After the well was digitally recorded, experts from Oxford Archaeology delicately dismantled it by hand for removal. Councillor Judy Roberts, Oxfordshire County Council's Cabinet Member for Infrastructure and Development Strategy, said, "This find gives fantastic insight into the area's past land use. It is thought the well may have been used for agricultural irrigation purposes for settlers nearby." Archaeological surveys like this are an important part of the process of delivering construction schemes. They help us identify and understand past residents of the area and record them for future generations. Other evidence of Bronze Age activity has previously been identified in and around Benson and as far as Wallingford. These excavation finds during work for the relief road show just how widespread agricultural activity was in the Bronze Age. A sample of the preserved wood was sent for further specialist recording to identify the type of wood used and to search for evidence of the tools used to cut and shape the wood. Additional finds on the site included pieces of struck flint, animal bone, and pottery used for storage and waste. The wood and the other artifacts will be stored with the Oxfordshire Museum Service, with a full report of the excavation to be released in due course.
Conservative Matthew Barber has been re-elected as the Thames Valley Police and Crime Commissioner. The incumbent won 144,092 votes across Oxfordshire, Buckinghamshire and Berkshire, securing a narrow majority of 2,300 over Labour's Tim Starkey. Mr. Barber promised to put more police officers on the streets and to prioritise tackling rape and sexual offences, domestic abuse, the nighttime economy, serious violence and abuse and exploitation. Celebrating his victory, he told the Oxford Mail, "I'm going to spend some time with the family, who probably haven't seen quite as much of me as they might like over recent weeks. There will certainly be a couple of beers." The Lib Dems' Tim Bearder finished in third place out of the five candidates, securing 84,341 votes. The turnout at the election was 25%, with a total of 448,495 valid votes cast out of an eligible electorate of 1,835,463. The May the 2nd vote was the fourth election of the Thames Valley PCC since the roll was introduced in 2012 under then Home Secretary Theresa May. Voters in 13 different local authority areas had their say on the next PCC, who will represent Thames Valley's 2.34 million residents. Mr Barber's victory was announced at the vote count at Newbury Racecourse by Nigel Lynn, the Police Area Returning Officer for the Thames Valley Police Area. Following his victory, the newly elected PCC shook hands with his election rivals, although Mr Bearder did not attend the count. Mr Barber admitted it had been a close-run contest between him and Mr Starkey, praising his rival's positive campaign and saying it had been a challenging night for the Conservatives in the local elections in England. He said, "When you look at the national picture, perhaps that's not entirely surprising. There was certainly an element of tactical voting." He added, "I'm delighted to have got the win. It was certainly very close." Mr Starkey, a barrister, said that there had been a huge surge of support for Labour, which bodes well for his party at the general election, expected to be held this autumn. He said the PCC role has always been won by the Conservatives in Thames Valley, so we had a mountain to climb. We got almost all the way to the summit, but not quite there. He said Mr Barber faced a challenge to rebuild trust in police, which has been shaken by scandals with police misconduct. He added, "But also on a more day-to-day basis, people are saying they don't see police. If they report things to the police, nothing happens. Thames Valley Police has a poor rate of solving crimes and communication with the public."
Oxford United co-owner Aninja Bakri was among those celebrating as Des Buckingham's side secured their place at Wembley at the game on Thursday, May the 9th. The Ewes booked their place at the National Stadium for the Sky Bet League One playoff final after beating Peterborough 2-1 over two legs. Des Buckingham's side travelled to the London Road Stadium with a 1-0 advantage over the Posh. From the first leg of the semi-final, meaning the Ewes only needed a draw to progress. A penalty at the end of the first half was enough for a 1-1 draw on the night, meaning the Ewes will now face Bolton in the final for a chance for promotion to the Championship. The Ewes have not been in the second tier of English football since the 1998-99 season, after missing out to Wycombe Wanderers in the 2019-20 playoff final. That playoff final was played behind closed doors due to the coronavirus pandemic, meaning the last time the Ewes fans cheered on their side at Wembley was in the 2016-17 in a 2-1 defeat to Coventry in the Checkatrade Trophy Final. Last month marked 5 years since Mr. Bakri joined the United board as a director, with his involvement increasing in September 2022 when he and fellow Indonesian investor Erick Thohir took a controlling 51% stake in the club. Mr. Bakri said, "All right, Oxford, it is 4 a.m. in the morning in Indonesia, and thanks to you all, we are going to go to Wembley. Congrats to the squad, to the manager, to the fans, community, the management, and now all the hard work will come to May the 18th in Wembley. I will see you there. Come on, you yellows." Around 1,300 Oxford United fans were at the game, with Trevor Lambert, Oxvox secretary, praising the squad for progressing into the playoff final. He said, "It was a nail-biting evening for all concerned, but the team stuck to their task and we find ourselves 90 minutes away from possible promotion to the championship." It is a tribute to Des Buckingham and his backroom team, to the players and to the fans and board. Whatever happens at Wembley, it's been an exhilarating season, mixing highs and lows, and the future is bright for the club on and off the field. Over the summer, we hope that the right decisions will be taken to enable the club to begin the process of relocating to a new and modern community stadium home. The Oxford United supporters panel said, "The team, players, coaches, medical staff, behind the scenes teams, and these fans, this is what's got us to Wembley for the EFL League One playoff final." Annalise Dodds, MP for Oxford East, said, "Can't wait. Well done to Oxford United for finishing the job against Peterborough." Oxfordshire County Councillor Liam Walker said, "What a team, what a game, what a moment. See you in Wembley." Charwell District Councillor Nicholas Moore said, "Looking forward to the chance of watching Championship football at the Triangle soon. A team for all of Oxfordshire. Good luck in the final."
There has been no change in the disparity of life expectancy between the richest and poorest residents in Oxfordshire, new figures show. However, across England, the gap between the life expectancies of the richest and poorest people has grown since 2010 to 12. A leading health professional has written to dozens of MPs in the worst affected areas, including former Prime Minister Liz Truss, Levelling Up Secretary Michael Gove, and former Health Secretary Steve Barclay. Professor Sir Michael Marmot told dozens of MPs their constituents were suffering avoidable ill health and living shorter lives than they should. New analysis by academics from the Institute of Health Equity at University College London shows the difference in life expectancy of the least and most deprived residents in Oxfordshire has broadly not changed. In 2017-19, before the coronavirus pandemic, the wealthiest male residents were expected to live 6.1 years longer than their poorest neighbours. This fell to 3.8 for female residents, though both figures were broadly in line with 2010-12. Sir Michael has written letters to the 58 MPs whose constituencies lie wholly or partially in the worst affected local areas. Also among the recipients are Culture Secretary Lucy Fraser, Conservative Party Chairman Richard Holden, Justice Minister Edward Argar, former Immigration Minister Robert Jenrick, and former Health Minister Maggie Throop. "We need you to fight for all your constituents' health. They are suffering avoidable ill health and living shorter lives than they should due to poor policies and cuts to essential services," Sir Michael wrote. He has also written to the leaders of all major political parties demanding action. In his letter to Prime Minister Rishi Sunak, Sir Michael said austerity and funding cuts have harmed health and worsened health inequalities. The analysis also shows Oxfordshire County Council's spending power declined by 21% in real terms from 2010-11 to 2020-21. When factoring in council tax rises and central government funding. A government spokesperson said, "As set out in our Levelling Up white paper, we are committed to narrowing the gap in healthy life expectancy by 2030 and to increasing healthy life expectancy by 5 years by 2035. Our upcoming major conditions strategy will help us to do this by tackling the key drivers of ill health in England. We are also investing £15 million billion, that is, not million, in local communities across the UK as part of our long-term plan to level up, ensure opportunity is spread more equally, and to reduce inequalities. They said they have given councils in England up to £64.7 billion for 24-25, a 7.5% rise in cash terms.
The store, a 101-bedroom boutique hotel created out of the former Boswell shop, has opened in Oxford. The hotel, on the corner of Corn Market and Broad Street, is on the site of the department store, which closed in 2020, and historic prints of the city landmark feature throughout the converted building. Among its features are the Treadwell restaurant on the ground floor and a rooftop terrace bar, a co-working space and a spa. Hospitality experts Reef Group and EQ Group have opened the hotel. General Manager Simon Drake said, "Boswell's was one of the world's oldest department stores, family-owned and much loved by the community. In the tradition of great British department stores, it was a place of discovery, a treasury trove of toys, cosmetics, fashion, household essentials, a haberdashery, well-known tea room and cafe. Throughout the hotel, we wanted to honour this and play on the same idea of intrigue, unexpected fun and curiosity, making an occasion out of the everyday. The 101 bedrooms have a number of different designs, some with plush velvet headboards, panelled walls and bold Art Deco features, others with leafy courtyard views, a muted palette and textures crafted for comfort. The restaurant, Treadwell, is named after the historic Treadwell Passage. Dating back to the early 19th century, the ground which the restaurant now sits upon was once a bustling and somewhat notorious hub of Oxford, home to a fish hawker, shoemaker, scavenger, needlewoman and more, all characters who are referenced in playful ways throughout the menu. Dish highlights include Ruby Murray chicken pie, bangers of mash with a Cajun gravy, and rosemary and thyme brined pork tomahawk. Treadwell will also serve brunch and Sunday lunch, including stuffed raspberry and vanilla cheesecake croissant, chorizo manchego and fried egg sandwich, and family-style roasts, sharing roasts, including lemon and thyme chicken. Located on the ground floor, the bar at the store is a more casual drinking, co-working and dining space, seating guests and the public inside on street level and al fresco style on Broad Street. The Skips and Samf Scavenger Bites menu will serve light bites and afternoon tea will also be available. On the fifth floor of the hotel is the panoramic rooftop bar and terrace. The roof at the store, offering views over Oxford, a year-round smokehouse serving smoked meats and cheeses, and bespoke spirits created with Hawkridge Distillery.
Ahead of Dementia Action Week, people are receiving advice on how to care for loved ones with the condition. Care UK, which operates Charlton Lodge in Wantage, is encouraging discussions about dementia with their initiative, The Big Dementia Conversation. The care provider has set up an online advice hub to foster more understanding about the condition. It explores lesser-known symptoms and features advice from their dementia specialists who have more than 40 years of experience. The regional director at Care UK said, "Here at Care UK, we're passionate about raising awareness and reducing misconceptions around dementia. It can be challenging to know how best to support your loved one or what not to say, which is why we launched the Big Dementia Conversation to get everyone talking. This Dementia Action Week, we're keen to share a little of our expertise to help the community. The care home operator has come up with 5 tips for supporting loved ones living with dementia. The first of these is making sure those with the condition stay active by involving them in daily tasks so they retain some independence. They also recommended reminiscing about fond memories and enjoying music from their past. They stressed the importance of maintaining routine, saying it can be reassuring.
A Banbury football club that encourages overweight and obese men to get fit has helped 30 men lose more than 25 stone in the last 12 months. Man Be Fat Banbury, which convenes every Sunday at the North Oxfordshire Academy on Drayton Road, is currently seeking new members. According to the Oxfordshire County Council Joint Strategic Needs Assessment, approximately 60% of individuals aged 18 and over in Oxfordshire are categorised as overweight or obese, which could represent up to 24,500 adults in Banbury. The Man v Fat programme was established by Andrew Shanahan as a response to his dissatisfaction with traditional weight loss classes that are predominantly aimed at women. With more than 8,200 players participating in more than 150 leagues across the UK, the scheme combines football with attainable weight loss targets specifically for men. BMI, or Body Mass Index, is a measurement made to assess how healthy you are according to your weight, height, age, etc. It's calculated by dividing your weight in kilos by your height in meters squared. Before each match, players' weights are recorded, followed by a 30-minute six-a-side football game. Teams are awarded extra goal bonuses based on their weight loss. The combined total of weight loss and match scores then contribute to the club's league position. George Millward, the coach of Banbury Man v Fat, said, "We have seen an increase in new sign-ups this year, bringing a whole new range of people into the club. Some are here for a weight loss journey, some come for the social aspect. I can see what the smiles and laughs each Sunday brings to a lot of the lads. A lot of players seem in a happy mental state at the club. We have players saying Man Be Fat is improving both their physical and mental health, so we are helping with a wide range of needs." In addition to the football matches, Man Be Fat participants also get support off the field, such as healthy meal recipes and general fitness tips. They also have full access to an online gym outside the weekly massage. Richard Crick, head of football at Man v Fat, said, "The men involved are genuinely changing their lives for the better by improving their physical and mental health while making a new friend and having fun in the process."
Oxford's Christian community will lead a procession through the city for this year's Holocaust Remembrance Day. The gathering, to mark the event known as Yom HaShoah by Jewish communities, will be part of the Global March of Life campaign that spreads across 25 countries and 500 cities. Initiated in Germany in 2007, March of Life has the motto, "Remembering Reconciliation, Taking a Stand Against Anti-Semitism." The annual processions represent a platform for Holocaust survivors, encourage reconciliation between descendants of victims and perpetrators, and rallies against present-day anti-Semitism. On 6th of May, the Christian community in Oxford started from the medieval Jewish cemetery outside the Botanic Garden, walked up High Street, and concluded the march at Bond Square. It was the first time the event had been held in Oxford, but it's hoped it will become an annual fixture. London, Cardiff, High Wycombe, Bristol, Belfast and Bournemouth are a few of the other UK cities set to hold memorial processions this year. Displaying the flags from various nations, marchers publicly denounced anti-Semitism, racism and discrimination. Dr. James E. Patrick, Oxford March of Life coordinator, said, 2 years after the National Anglican Service of Repentance in Christchurch Cathedral on the 800th anniversary of the anti-Semitic Synod of Oxford, it is more urgent than ever that Christians produce fruit in keeping with repentance. It is not enough to express sorrow for indifference or hostility towards the Jewish people in the past. We must be leading the rest of our community in resisting anti-Semitism today. We will not turn a deaf ear to the slander and misrepresentation of our Jewish friends and their remarkable nation of Israel. Pastor Phil Herkiotz of Cornerstone Church, Oxford, said, as the survivors grow older, frailer and fewer, we get together publicly to say, we remember, we will honour, we will not forget, and we will do all in our power to prevent it from happening again. The March of Life is an ideal opportunity to remind our nation and our churches of our immense debt to the Jewish people. Len Graetz from the International Christian Embassy Jerusalem added, the memories of the tragic past are being relived again after the inhuman attacks of October the 7th, 2023, against more than 1,200 defenceless Jews living in southern Israel. We are here to remember those who lost their lives and those who are still held hostage in terror tunnels beneath Gaza, including women and children. We choose to act instead in solidarity with the Jewish community as they face ever-increasing hatred, both at home and abroad.
The COVID-19 vaccine developed by Oxford scientists during the pandemic has been withdrawn from the market. Pharmaceutical giant AstraZeneca said that it was incredibly proud of the vaccine, but it had been withdrawn due to plummeting demand. In December 2020, the vaccine known as Vaxzevria came to the second COVID-19 jab to be approved for use in the UK, and former Prime Minister Boris Johnson hailed it as a triumph for British science. Vaccine makers agreed that it could be manufactured on a not-for-profit basis for the duration of the pandemic across the world and in perpetuity to low- and middle-income countries. Billions of doses were created and made available across 183 countries. Estimates suggest that the rollout of the jab saved 6.3 million lives around the world. But AstraZeneca said that the rise of new variants in the virus, which causes COVID-19, had shifted market demand towards newer vaccines geared towards tackling these variants. A spokesperson for AstraZeneca said, "We are incredibly proud of the role Vaxzevria played in ending the global pandemic. According to independent estimates, over 6.5 million lives were saved in the first year of use alone, and over 3 billion doses were supplied globally. Our efforts have been recognised by governments around the world and are widely regarded as being a critical component of ending the global pandemic. As multiple variant COVID-19 vaccines have been developed, there is a surplus of available updated vaccines. This has led to a decline in demand for Vaxzevria, which is no longer being manufactured or supplied. AstraZeneca has therefore taken the decision to initiate withdrawal of the marketing authorizations for Vaxzevria within Europe. We will now work with regulators and our partners to align on a clear path forward to conclude this chapter and significant contribution to the COVID-19 pandemic."
Abingdon residents of all ages are benefiting from the growth of a school's countryside centre. Radley College's farm sits in Greenbelt between the college's Kennington Road campus and Sugworth Lane. It offers a host of programmes designed to provide support to people in the community. The Capstone Programme, the centre's core offering, is aimed at helping teenagers who are on the verge of exclusion from secondary school. These teenagers have been placed on a reduced timetable at school and spend 2 or 3 days a week at the farm engaging in activities such as building log sheds, planting trees, tending to livestock, fishing, gardening, and gaining knowledge on horticulture. Charlie Herbert, Director of Countryside Centre Partnerships at Radley College, said, "Getting these kids out of the classroom, which doesn't really work for them, and giving them a degree of independence and responsibility has had a profound impact on these young people. They're more confident and have greater self-esteem, but their schools are telling us that their conduct at school is much better and they're far happier." Pauline Wildman, deputy head at FitzHarris School, said, "We're thrilled with the results and have noticed a reduction in behavioural incidents since they've started on the programme, showing that our pupils are more grounded and happier because of this work." Besides hosting school visits, the centre also welcomes children who are suffering from trauma or who are recent arrivals in the UK, striving to get used to life in England. The Countryside Centre has a partnership with Oxford Head Injury Services. This initiative has supported Tony Warwick, an Abingdon resident, in his recovery from a stroke. He said, "I come here with a couple of friends who are in a similar position, and we enjoy spending time with the animals, planting trees and flowers, and learning new skills. I don't have much mobility in my left-hand side because of my stroke, and coming here helps with my symptoms." John Moole, warden of Radley College, added, "We know that mainstream education isn't for everybody, but we don't want to see children's education curtailed because of that. If we can offer a limited intervention to help them achieve their long-term potential, then that is a very important thing for us to do." Oxford Mail and the Oxford Times, in partnership with Radley College, has launched Bright Ideas, a new competition celebrating creativity in Oxfordshire. We are asking children in year 4 and 5 from local primary schools to unlock their imagination and create a response to theme of keys. Children can submit whatever feels most personal or appropriate to them. They may wish to write a story, poem or song, or make a video, design project, artwork or game. Shortlisted entries will be invited to a presentation morning at Radley College on June the 29th. The winner will receive a £100 voucher and a trophy. TV star Jamie Lang will be the judge. Oxford-born Jamie attended Radley College before making his name and building successful businesses, including Candy Kittens. Entries must be in by 9 p.m. on May the 24th. Stories and poems can be up to 600 words, while songs and videos can be 4 minutes long. And remember, the theme is keys. For full details, contact communications@radley.org.uk.
New shared cycleways have been approved despite strong concerns being raised by a sight loss charity. Highways Chief Andrew Gant gave the green light to the measures in Carterton at a county council meeting. The shared use foot and cycleways will come to Upavon Way, Carterton Road, Marsh Way, Norton Way and Brize Norton Road. But a spokesman for the Royal National Institute of Blind People said, "RNIB strongly opposes the proposal for these footways to be converted into shared used paths. Shared use areas are non-inclusive and present potentially serious dangers to both pedestrians with sight loss and cyclists. This is because cycles are extremely difficult for blind and partially sighted people to see or hear, and it is not always obvious to cyclists which pedestrians are blind or partially sighted. There is a real risk of people with sight loss unknowingly stepping into the path of a cyclist, and the cyclist being unaware that the pedestrian hasn't seen them, resulting in a collision. All evidence we have collected suggests that shared use developments are more likely to result in blind and partially cited people's exclusion from public spaces, which negatively impacts their health and ability to engage in society. But Mr. Gunt told the meeting there isn't the space for a segregated cycle lane. Oxfordshire County Council carried out a formal consultation in February and March of this year in which key stakeholders were contacted and a letter sent directly to more than 100 properties in the area. A total of 14 responses were received, with 4 objections, 4 raising concerns, 2 partially supporting, 3 in support, and 1 non-objection. Carterton Town Council was among those in support, while police raised no objections. Speaking at the Transport Management meeting, Robin Tucker, co-chair of the Coalition for Healthy Streets and Active Travel, Co-HSAT, said the group supported the proposal but added, "The current state of these paths is very poor for walking and wheeling. We do not consider this to be a particularly good cycling infrastructure. Perhaps slower, less confident cyclists will use the path." Mr. Gant later said, "A cyclist is perfectly entitled to use the road, but that is not within the scope of this scheme." Questions were raised over an apparent lack of connectivity of paths. A Carterton Town Council spokesman said, "The council discussed the proposals and are keen to submit a positive response. They are grateful that these funds are going to be spent improving cycling infrastructure and safety in Carterton. However, they did raise the issue of connectivity, as the paths seem to be independent of each other and are not necessarily on the busiest cycle routes."
Hundreds of runners took part in a mass mile run in Oxford to mark the 70th anniversary of Sir Roger Bannister's record-breaking 4-minute mile. Runners gathered in St Aldate's, raced down Oxford High Street, and finally sprinted to the finish line on Iffley Road, the same track where Sir Roger created history. The event was organised jointly by the Oxford University Athletic Club and the University of Oxford, backed by Oxfordshire County Council. Sir Roger's son, Thurston Bannister, was in attendance to celebrate his father's legacy. He said, "After retiring from competitive athletics, my father continually encouraged elite athletes and amateur runners of all ages." "The track and community miles will be exciting to watch, and I'm sure many runners will find them." The community mile was open to participants of all ages and abilities. Jared Martin, club captain of Oxford University Cross Country Club, said, "Oxford University Athletic Club and Oxford University Cross Country Club are extremely excited to host Bannister Miles on this special anniversary. For the city of Oxford and beyond, Bannister Miles offers an unparalleled opportunity to celebrate the benefits of sport." The University of Oxford Vice Chancellor, Professor Irene Tracy, took part in the race on the Saturday morning, sporting the bib number 125. She said, "I grew up with a love of sport and remain a keen runner, committed to the transformative benefits of sport." The Bannister Mile was a fitting way to mark this legacy achieved at the university 70 years ago. Author and broadcaster Liz Fraser also took part in the event. She said, "Just ran the Bannister Community Mile and met my all-time running hero, Steve Cram. Thank you for inspiring me when I was 9. Hicham El Garouj, world record holder for the 1,500, that's 1,500 metre sprint, also took part. He won the world record in 1997 with a time of 3 minutes and 26 seconds. Speaking ahead of the event, Councillor Dr. Nathan Lee, Oxfordshire County Council's Cabinet Member for Public Health, Inequalities and Community Safety, said, "We are delighted to be supporting this event to mark the 70th anniversary of Sir Roger Bannister's impressive feat. We hope it will help to inspire more children and young people to follow in Sir Roger's footsteps." In addition to the athletic events, visitors could indulge in food and drink stalls, explore a pop-up World Athletics museum, and engage with health and fitness groups. As the day came to a close, World Athletics Heritage Plaques unveiled a plaque to recognise Sir Roger's achievement and Oxford University Athletic Club's contribution to athletics.
Robert Frost wrote The Road Not Taken as a joke for a friend, the poet Edward Thomas. When they went walking together, Thomas was chronically indecisive about which road they ought to take, and in retrospect, often lamented that they should, in fact, have taken the other one. Soon after writing the poem in 1915, Frost griped Thomas that he had read the poem to an audience of college students, and that it had been taken pretty seriously, despite doing my best to make it obvious by my manner that I was fooling. Mea culpa. However, Frost liked to quip, "I'm never more serious than when joking." The Road Not Taken. Two roads diverged in a yellow wood, and sorry I could not travel both and be one traveller. Long I stood and looked down one as far as I could to where it bent in the undergrowth. Then took the other, as just as fair, and having perhaps the better claim, because it was grassy and wanted wear. Though as for that, the passing there had warned them really about the same. And both that morning equally lay in leaves no step had trodden black. Oh, I kept the first for another day. Yet knowing how way leads on to way, I doubted if I would ever come back. I shall be telling this with a sigh, somewhere ages and ages hence. Two roads diverged in a wood, and I took the one less travelled by, and that has made all the difference.
An Oxford cinema has been given a major revamp featuring a brand new bar. The Ultimate Picture Palace, the UPP, Jeune Street off Cowley Road, dates back to 1911 with its Art Deco building intact, including the original box office window opening onto the street. In 2022, the cinema celebrated becoming a community-owned business after a campaign in which over 1,200 local investors bought shares. Now it has had another significant change, with a new bar being installed at the location in the past few weeks. After a few months of planning and a couple of days of redecorating, the brand new feature opened on Thursday, April the 25th. Tom Jowett is the head of programming and marketing in the cinema and revealed that the changes were to ensure guests remember their visits. Since the UPP became community-owned in 2022, we've been thinking of ways to make coming to our cinema a more memorable experience. There's nothing better than settling into your seat with a big mug of tea or a glass of wine in one hand and a homemade brownie in the other while the lights go down and the trailers begin. Coming to the cinema should feel like a treat to yourself. So we wanted to make coming to the UPP feel special, no matter what your age or your background. So we've made our cosy auditorium look even more inviting and special. We were also very keen to increase the number of local suppliers we work with. As an independent business ourselves, we understand just how important that support is right now. Work included a new coat of fresh, colourful paint and the installation of some colourful menu boards. We've upped the number of local suppliers, including guest wine and beers, chosen by the good people of Grape Mines in Summertown, added the 35-year-old. There's also a bespoke, half-caffeinated blend of coffee batched up by East Oxford's Missing Bean. If customers want something a little stronger, We now have a couple of cocktail options to choose from, including our own recipe of Old Fashioned. We have also introduced our very own picked and mixed sweetie bags, as well as freshly made popcorn for an instant hit of cinema nostalgia. And I guess it wouldn't be the UPP without something a bit strange and quirky to snacking pickles, anyone? To celebrate the new bar, the Ultimate Picture Palace have programmed a season of classic foodie films this month. These include Peter Greenaway's 1989 flick The Cook, The Thief, His Wife and Her Lover, Juzo Itami's 1988 ramen western Tampopo, and Stanley Tucci's 1996 hit Big Night.
A display will help people remember their loved ones and raise money for a hospice. The event at Upton House and Gardens near Banbury is in support of Catherine House Hospice's Rose to Remember scheme. The initiative allows individuals to purchase a handcrafted white metal rose to honour the life of a loved one. These roses will be part of a temporary display at Upton House from June the 18th to 30th. Visitors who purchase a rose will be offered free admission by the National Trust, who run the site, during the exhibition, allowing them to see their roses on display. An exclusive viewing for everyone who purchases a rose is scheduled for June the 18th, with Catherine House's team members providing support to guests. Each £30 rose, crafted by Black Country Metalworks, measures around 10 centimetres in diameter and 50 centimetres in height when placed in the ground. Individual giving manager Sally Brooks said, "Roses were the favourite flower of Catherine Gadsbury, after whom our hospice was named, and now form part of our logo, so it feels like a fitting tribute to have chosen them as the theme for our annual event. We are so grateful for Upton Trust for their generosity and for CMS Wealth for sponsoring the event this year."
Oxford Public has been left mystified and vexed after the police force changed its badge. Thames Valley Police is celebrating over 50 years since its formation in the 1970s and has decided to update certain aspects of the force's identity. One of these is the badge, which has been in use since the 1990s and features a coat of arms in a shield shape with the checkerboard and the force's name. Now Thames Valley Police has updated this badge and changed to a more simplistic crest, which features no words or coat of arms. A spokesperson for the force said, "The world has changed dramatically since the 1968, and we need to reflect the modern policing service we provide. We've taken inspiration from the coat of arms to maintain a sense of history, and from now on we'll protect the use of it for ceremonial purposes. We are proud to have now created a strong, clear and simpler identity which is accessible, scalable and over time can be consistently applied so that we are easily recognisable in all our work to protect our communities." The badge did not go down well with the greater public when the new logo was revealed on Wednesday, May the 8th. "Why? Some things just don't need to be changed. Sorry, TVA," said one commentator. "If it ain't broke, don't mend it. Sorry, TVP," added another. Another person, left irked by the switch, said, "Sorry, I know that I'm an old traditionalist, but this new badge looks unfinished." Others felt very strongly about the change and took issues with how the new crest looked. On the comment sheet provided, someone else simply put, "Why, oh why?" Another added, "Very disappointed, not what I would have chosen." Thames Valley Police defended the new crest, but revealed that it would take some time for it to filter through all channels and become the new norm. A spokesperson for the force said, It will take time to filter across all our documents and forms. In the meantime, it will be visible to our partners in our communications and joint activity. You'll start to see it across our external channels, including our website and social media accounts. For example, physical items such as signage and vehicles will be updated in line with when they are routinely due for replacement. This means we expect the full refresh of our identity to take time to be fully in place.
A musician and artist is set to feature at an event in Oxford focusing on his family history. On May the 11th, Peter Braithwaite will be sharing his family history at the Western Library, part of the Bodleian Library, from 1 p.m. to 4 p.m. This will include Mischief in the Lecture Theatre, in conversation with Peter Braithwaite, from 2 till 3 p.m. This event will offer an inside look at his pop-up exhibit, Mischief, in the archives. Visitors will be guided through the display, discovering the personal stories behind Mr. Braithwaite's family history research. There will also be a hands-on activity for attendees to create their own keepsake from Mischief in the archives. People will also learn about conducting Caribbean and African family history research using the Bodleian's rich archival collections. The We Are Our History project, which highlights diverse histories and encourages individuals to reclaim their personal stories, will also be discussed. People will delve deeper into the Bodleian's collections and explore the significance of archival research and its power in shaping understanding. By outlining Mr. Braithwaite's ancestry, which ties back to the British-owned Codrington plantations in Barbados, Mischief in the Archives aims to challenge preconceived racial narratives and rehumanize history. Stories of ancestors who were intrinsically linked to slavery, such as enslaved and later freed black couple Margaret and Addo Braithwaite and John Braithwaite, a white plantation owner, are showcased. Mr. Braithwaite challenges the conventional narrative of colonial records by presenting his family artifacts alongside the materials researched at the Bodleian Libraries, creating what he refers to as counter-archives. In historical archives, enslaved individuals were often referred to as mischievous for merely asserting their humanity and personhood. Mr. Braithwaite's approach of merging personal family items with the Bodleian selection gives voice to those the archives have long silenced. The event is a collaboration with the Bodleian Libraries, forming part of the library's Mellon Foundation-funded research project, We Are Our History. The project title borrows inspiration from American writer James Baldwin's quote, "History is not the past, it is the present. We carry our history with us. We are our history." The initiative is one of several aimed at fostering inclusion and diversity by re-evaluating collections, audience engagement, and staffing all through the lens of rare and British Empire legacies. Past collaborations have included the These Things Matter Empire, Exploitation and Everyday Racism exhibition.
An open-top bus tour is set to be launched in Oxford to celebrate the city's black history. City Sightseeing Oxford, in partnership with award-winning producer and author of Black Oxford, Untold Stories, Pamela Roberts, is introducing the tour to tell the stories of Oxford's black scholars. Passengers will learn about the life of Christian Frederick Cole, the University of Oxford's first black scholar and Britain's first black barrister, among others. The tour will take passengers to the city's landmark spots such as the Radcliffe Camera and the Bridge of Sighs. The exclusive tour will take place on fixed dates across the summer and will also operate across 2 weekends in October to mark Black History Month. It will take place on the City Sightseeing Oxford hop-on, hop-off bus. Ms. Roberts will narrate the tour, while there will be chances to stop and walk around the city with guides on hand. From the top deck, passengers will get to enjoy views of Oxford's spires. Pamela Roberts, founder and director of Black Oxford Untold Stories, said, "The tour sets out to challenge the misconception that historically black students never studied at the University of Oxford. When it comes to the University of Oxford's historic alumni, the names of Oscar Wilde, C.S. Lewis, Margaret Thatcher, Harold Wilson, and Bill Clinton are familiar to many. But what about its black scholars? Guests will learn about the lives of Oxford's forgotten black community in a time of adversity. For example, James Arthur Harley, who became the first black scholar at the Pitt Rivers Museum, and Kofowarola Moore, Oxford University's first African woman scholar at St. Hugh's College." Luke Marion, City Sightseeing Oxford Managing Director, said, "We're proud to have formed such an innovative partnership that enables us to offer our customers a unique sight into Oxford's history. The visitor economy is vital to the overall economic well-being of the city, and the addition of this unique tour forms part of our ongoing strategy to deliver a world-class welcome to Oxford and to showcase the diversity history of our great city. Tickets for the tour will cost £20 for adults and £11 for children, with student and senior tickets priced at £15. The tour will last 90 minutes and will take place on July the 27th, August 10th and September the 14th, as well as across 2 weekends in October."
An instant influx of tourists hit Jeremy Clarkson's Oxfordshire farm straight after the first episodes from Series 3 were released. It was reported to be the busiest it's been since last summer, as hundreds of people arrived and huge queues formed at the globally famous Diddley Squat Farm Shop and its bar serving the farm's own Hawkstone lager and cider. And visitors' vehicles overflowed from the full car park, setting down on the grass verges outside again. Diddley Squat Farm near Chipping Norton was bought by the former Top Gear host in 2008, and since the star's decision to turn his hand to farming, the site on the eve of the pandemic, it has become a place of a pilgrimage for many fans. The series, following the novice farmer's battle with the elements, planning authorities and livestock, has become the most watched show on Amazon Prime Video. The first four episodes of Series 3 were released on May the 3rd, which resulted in masses of viewers flocking to Chadlington near Chipping Norton. One staff member told the Oxford Mail just how busy it had been, saying it hasn't been this busy since midsummer last year. Fans of the show travelled from far and wide, including Anna, Remy and Sarah, who are originally from Minnesota in the United States. "We're big fans of the show," they said. "One of us has been watching for years, but the rest of us just got into it, so we figured if we were in the area, it would be fun to visit. We have never been here before, but we're hoping to find some jam and honey, and the beer sounds quite exciting. The queues are to be expected, and we feel it's especially busy because the new season just came out. We have managed to watch an episode of the show while we have been waiting in the queue." As the queues built up, staff warned visitors to move their cars from the grass verge outside the farm shop. The car park had already filled up early in the day, and desperate fans had resorted to parking anywhere and everywhere in an attempt to reach the farm. Jeremy Clarkson spoke out on the Saturday, addressing concerns over the brutality of the new episodes of the show. Taking to social media platform X, he said, "Thank you all for sending such kind words about Clarkson's Farm 3. I know it's tough to watch in places, but that's farming sometimes, brutal. It's probably a good thing to say that four more episodes of Clarkson's Farm are out next week, and I promise they're less harrowing."
Final preparations are being made to welcome thousands of people for Abingdon's Air and Country Show, which will include the Gazelle Squadron helicopter team. This year's event is set to take place at Abingdon Airfield on Saturday, May the 18th. Last year, big crowds enjoyed the 23rd annual air show, featuring about 70 different aircraft, from helicopters to Second World War fighters, as well as light and sport aircraft. The show usually attracts about 10,000 people and raises thousands of pounds for local charities, including Thames Valley Air Ambulance. Founder and event organiser Neil Porter said, "Lots of time has been put in once again from the committee and also the core volunteers involved to create a family-friendly event for the community and the wider audience. It costs a huge amount to put on, but as long as the costs do not rise too much, we can sustain the show, so public support is vital in helping to fund it via ticket sales, for example." This year, the afternoon flying display consists of the Gazelle Squadron helicopter team, aerobatics from the Titans display team, and muscle pits, complete with a car race using a Ferrari. There will also be acrobatics from a 1950s jet Provost, the Royal Air Force Falcons parachute display team, and a strong 1940s lineup of Hurricanes, Spitfires, Auster, P-51 Mustang, and Boeing B-17 Flying Fortress bomber Sally B, to which the airfield played host in 2021 during the making of the drama Masters of the Air, which portrayed the 100th Bomb Group during the Second World War. Displays on the ground will include classic cars and flight simulators. Abingdon County Councillor Neil Fawcett said, "It's a fantastic family event and we are very lucky that we have Abingdon Airfield which can host it. Last year, a 2.5-hour flying display kicked off the day with Mustangs, a Yak 3, a Bronco demo team, plus Wasp and Lynx helicopters. The air show raises money for good causes too. Hopefully it will continue for years to come." For more information, visit the website at abingdonandoxfordcountry.co.uk.
Staff at Blenheim Palace have described being featured in the grand finale of the fifth series of the TV show Interior Design Masters, which they hope will entice more people to visit. Hosted by comedian Alan Carr and designer Michelle Ogundahin, the BBC show saw Roy Sheen Quinn being crowned the champion. The show challenged 10 amateur designers to transform different spaces across 8 episodes to battle for a place in the finale, which was aired on Tuesday, April the 30th. Heather Carter, managing director at Blenheim Palace, said, "It was a great pleasure and a lot of fun to have Interior Design Masters with Alan Carr film with us at Blenheim Palace in September last year. They were here for 5 days filming both at the palace and the lodges, and we managed to keep it secret until the big reveal on BBC One. We have a lot of filming here at the palace, and it gives us great reach into new audiences. We know that being featured on such a popular program as Interior Design Masters will entice more people to visit the palace and book one of the lodges." Winner Roy Sheen Quinn and runner-up Matt Smithwood had 3 days and £6,000 to redesign holiday lodges at the 18th century building as part of the BBC show. Throughout the series, contestants were asked to make over offices, a B&B, a wedding hotel, beach huts and hair salons.
Hundreds of cuddly toy giraffes have been sent on an air-to-air refuelling mission by RAF Brize Norton for charity. It's the second time the RAF base has partnered with Giraffes on Tour to raise fund for Great Ormond Street Hospital. Last year's mission, which saw 291 giraffes flown on an RAF Voyager, raised £4,000. This year, the passenger limit on the same plane was lifted to 500. Following the evening refueling mission, the giraffes are now being sold on the Giraffes on Tour website, raising more than £10,000 from sales so far. Flight Lieutenant Mark Scott, 10 Squadron Voyager pilot, said the charity's fundraising for Great Ormond Street Hospital has been close to my heart for several years, and it's an honour for me to use a normal day at work to help them do something extraordinary. Giraffes on Tour honours the memory of Louise Conway, who died from leukemia in 2013.
The Strictly Come Dancing professional dancers have begun their tour of the UK, starting off at Oxford New Theatre. Reigning champion Vito Coppola, who lifted the Glitterball trophy in December with actress Ellie Leach, was among the 12 dancers who kicked off the first night of the 37-day tour recently. Jovita Prishtal, who won Strictly in 2022 with wildlife cameraman Hamza Yassin, also performed alongside longest-serving Strictly professional Karen Hauer and three-time Strictly finalist Gorka Marquez. Other performers from the BBC's flagship show for the Strictly the Professionals tour included Diane Buswell, Nikita Kuzmin, Neil Jones, Luba Mushtuk, Graziano Di Prima, Carlos Gu, Michelle Tsiakas, and Nancy Zhu. The 12-strong ensemble will perform their ballroom and Latin routines, bringing the glamour from the hit TV show to live stages across the UK. In May, the dancers will perform at the London Palladium, while the show will come to a close at the Globe Theatre in Stockton-on-Tees. Neil Jones said his girlfriend, Sheena Mills, will bring their six-month-old daughter, Havana, to spend time with him if he is performing one show a day instead of two. While veteran Gorka Marquez said his girlfriend and former Strictly star Gemma Atkinson will also bring their four-year-old daughter, Mia, to watch him perform in London or Manchester because she loves to see Daddy dance. He said their son, Tiago, born last July, was too young to understand the passage of time while he is away from home on the Strictly tour or as a judge on the Spanish version of Strictly. Karen Hauer, who has been with the show since 2012, said she and 41-year-old Jones were conscious of keeping up with all the younger dancers, so she trains every day to maintain her stamina. Time and again, though, any exhaustion you might feel simply evaporates when you're in front of an audience. Nothing is more exciting, she said. Meanwhile, it's the second professional tour for reigning champion Coppola, who said it was special that dancers from all around the world are united in their passion for dance as brothers and sisters. Diane Buswell said she would spend her day off from the tour on May the 6th, celebrating her 35th birthday with her boyfriend Joe Sugg, whom she met on the BBC show.
Oxford has been named as one of the top locations to stargaze this spring, according to new research. Ranking in at 7th place, Oxford offers an optimal environment for admiring the Flower Moon on Thursday, May the 23rd, a phenomenon signalling the arrival of spring in its full splendour. The study, considering factors such as light pollution and air quality, demonstrated that the city presents promising conditions for astronomical activities. The top location for stargazing was found to be Barnsley, due to its low light pollution and air pollution levels. Northampton, York, Brighton, Bournemouth, Rochdale, Swindon, Peterborough and Havering made up the rest of the top 10.
Great Western Railway has named a train after Princess Anne in recognition of her support for more than 300 charities, organisations and military regiments. The Intercity Express train 800024 was named the Princess Royal during a ceremony at London Paddington. The King's sister attended the event with her husband, Vice Admiral Sir Tim Lawrence, who is a member of the GWR Advisory Board. Following the train's nameplate unveiling, she spoke to guests, including Secretary of State for Transport Mark Harper, former Prime Minister Theresa May and Transport for London Commissioner Andrew Lord. Great Western Railway Managing Director Mark Hopwood said, "Today, GWR proudly continues this tradition, recognising and celebrating inspirational individuals who have shaped the communities and the nation. Her Royal Highness has dedicated a large part of her working life to official engagements and visits, and we are delighted to recognise this immense contribution by carrying her name on the side of this intercity express train." Mr. Harper added, "Her Royal Highness has made a significant contribution to so many important charities, events and public services, so it gives me great pride to celebrate this through one of the greatest traditions on our railways." The train's design takes inspiration from GWR's King George V locomotive, featuring a coin design on its side that pictures the princess competing in the 1976 Montreal Olympics on one side, and the GWR coat of arms on the other. Anna Marie Phelps, Vice Chairman of the British Olympic Association, said, "HRH the Princess Royal is synonymous with British Olympic sport and the British Olympic Association. Having competed as an Olympian, she also holds the unique record of being an IOC member, having led an international sport federation, and of course, being the mother to another Olympian, Zara Tyndall. Princess Anne has been affiliated with an array of charitable endeavours, including serving as president of Save the Children UK since 1970, and also as patron of the Motor Neurone Disease Association since 2008. Gemma Sherrington, interim chief executive of Save the Children, said, "The Princess Royal has supported the work of Save the Children for over 50 years and as our patron has worked tirelessly to support us, visiting teams in the UK and around the world and regularly meeting with our inspirational fundraisers and volunteers." Tanya Curry, the chief executive of the MND Association, added, "HRH the Princess Royal has offered steadfast support to the MND Association for more than 16 years and is a remarkable advocate for people with motor neurone disease, a terminal illness which affects more than 5,000 people in the UK at any one time."
New data suggesting a rise in city centre visitors has prompted some traders to raise concern and say the authority responsible needs to talk to them to get proper statistics. It comes as the City Council released figures pointing to a slight increase in the percentage of city centre shop visitors with Oxford postcodes from 44.4% in the first quarter of 2023 to 50.8% in the first quarter of 2024. Data from the authority shared in December also suggested there were nearly 500,000 more visitors to the city centre between September and November 2023 compared to the same period in 2022. Gillian, who is owner of Covered Market Hatbox store, said, "A couple of my customers have said it took them an hour to get in. The footfall they keep promoting, that's people coming in and eating, clothing shops and butchers, have gone and now we're left." Another retailer, who wished to remain anonymous, added, "The LTNs are a nightmare. I live in Blackbird Leas and it takes me well over an hour to get in every morning. Every year, fewer and fewer people are coming in. The council sees people cutting through as footfall. For them to get the proper statistics, they need to ask us traders." A popular cake shop of 38 years said last month it would be closing in the Covered Market and relocating to West Oxfordshire town of Witney due to traffic restrictions, making it difficult for them to operate. Not every business owner had a negative view of the traffic measures, with Graham MacDonald from IS Cream Gelato saying, "We had a very busy day on the bank holiday." I had quite a few people come in wearing their Rogers Bannister medals. Newly elected independent Oxford Alliance candidate for the Rose Hill and Iffley ward, David Henwood, is another sceptic of city council calculation methods. He said, "There should be a system where businesses tell us rather than we tell them. Measuring footfall by signals generated from mobile phones doesn't really give you an accurate assessment. It tells you who might be in Oxford, but not whether they shop." Carfax and Jericho ward councillor Alex Hollingworth suggested he does not believe there has been a fall in city centre footfall impacting traders. The Labour representative added, "All the evidence is absolutely clear. The vast majority of people travel to Oxford on foot, by bike or bus. I think there is a misconception that has existed for decades that is cars that go into shops. It is not. It's people." A city council spokesman said, "There are no counters to assess how busy each individual shop is. Each shop would need to install their own counting system to do this, and duplication of visitors to multiple shops would throw up inaccuracies. Most cities and towns in the UK use the mobile phone counting method as it shows unique visitor counts as opposed to other forms of counting. It has its limitations, but there is currently no better alternative that the council is aware of."
A new shop selling women's clothing and homewares has been launched in Summertown, Oxford. White Coco has opened its doors in South Parade in a unit previously occupied by Vanilla. The brainchild of Sally Boddington, the shop offers a collection of clothes with a balance between chic fashion and classic style. The business already has shops in Hungerford and Kings Road, Chelsea. The shop also sells gifts and homeware, with new stock arriving every week. Vanilla had been a fixture in Summertown since 2000, but closed in March after its owner, Renata Beaumont, retired. Like its sister stores, the new Summertown shop will stock a hand-picked range of clothing. It will be open between 9 a.m. and 5:30 p.m. from Monday to Saturday, but is closed on Sundays.
And that was the last item for this week. Please note there is now a new telephone number for you to ring if you have any comments about this week's Oxtalk edition. Please ring 07 496 062 280 and leave your name and contact details, as well as your message. Alternatively, you can email mail@oxtalk.org.uk. This edition and previous editions are available on our website, www.oxtalk.org.uk, where you can either listen or download. Thank you very much for listening.